You're listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit nakedbiblepodcast.com and click on the support link in the upper right-hand corner. If you're new to the podcast and Dr. Heiser's approach to the Bible, click on New Start Here at nakedbiblepodcast.com.
Welcome to the Naked Bible Podcast, Episode 78, Interviews for Mike's Academic Conferences, Part 2. I'm your layman, Trey Strickland, and he's a scholar, Dr. Michael Heiser. Hey, Mike, how are you doing this week?
Very good, and happy to resume again some of the interviews I took during the conference week of ETS and SBL. Again, more of the same, but in this particular episode, there's one or two people that, again, I go way back with that I think folks will find, you know, interesting, a little anecdote here and there about me and again, just the relationships that I have with some of these people. But it's just interesting, again, you know, to know that, hey, there are people out there working on XYZ. Again, might be some crazy, you know, field or like, why would anybody be interested in that? But there are people who take a very high view of Scripture and really apply themselves in research and study, not just, again, for what they do in the classroom, but also in their writing. And our goal here, again, is to try to take some of that content at some point and, you know, filter it down, make it decipherable so that people outside the guild can benefit from it.
All right. Well, looking forward to it.
I'm here with Sam Lamerson. We're at the IBR meeting now. We've changed meetings from ETS. So, Sam, why don't you introduce yourself and just tell our listeners who you are and why you're here.
My name is Sam Lamerson. I teach New Testament and am the president of Knox Theological Seminary. And I came all this way just so I could see Mike.
That's a wonderful answer. Are you looking forward to any papers?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some papers on learning languages. I teach Greek, so there's a session on learning languages through computers that I'll be going to tomorrow that I'm looking forward to. A textual criticism session on Sunday that I'm looking forward to.
Well, Sam, you have some unusual hobbies or interests. Can you share some of those?
I paid my way through graduate school working as a juggler and magician and ventriloquist and still show up in Nickelodeon reruns every once in a while.
And you also do mentalism, is that correct?
Yeah, mentalism is sort of a branch of magic that simulates mind reading. Of course, nobody can really read minds, but a mentalist tries to give that appearance.
So, I mean, did you all hear that? We have a New Testament scholar here who does magic and card tricks and all this sort of stuff, but you never thought you'd hear that. Now, Sam, what's your academic specialty?
My specialty is Greek and the Synoptic Gospels, particularly the Gospel of Matthew. My dissertation was on a parable in Matthew, so I'm particularly interested in storytelling, both in the Bible and in sermons today.
Last question, are you angling for any specific books while you're here?
There are some books that I'm looking for, but I want to take a very good look at all the books because this is like one of the most amazing book buying trips of the year. I have to make sure I have room in my suitcase. That's the biggest problem that I have.
All right, well, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
No problem. I hope everybody has a great time.
Yeah, I'm here at IBR with familiar person to the podcast listeners, David Burnett. We interviewed David a few episodes back. And so, David, just for those who don't know you, introduce yourself a little bit and tell us why you're here.
Yeah, my name is David Burnett. I am a teaching pastor at Arthur City Baptist Church in Northern Texas and finished my MATBS and a BA in Biblical Studies. Me and Mike have been good friends for years. He's my thesis reader, and I'm a fervent researcher on the Divine Council and how it's been appropriated in Second Temple Judaism and New Testament, and presented for the first time last year at SBL on the national stage with N.T. Wright, and now I'm here again at SBL and presenting a paper on Luke 22, which hopefully me and Mike will debate about on the podcast soon, so I can make sure that he's corrected on his reading of Luke 22.
I'll find something to disagree with, so... Now, you just got here, but are there any specific papers you're interested in hearing that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, quite a few. That's hard to narrow down. I'm always interested in the Paul Within Judaism group to try to rethink Paul as a first century Jew, and I get along with those guys a lot, so I'm going to enjoy that session quite a bit, I think. Yeah.
Well, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Absolutely, anytime.
I'm here at SBL AAR with Steve Wiggins. Steve is a a friend of some years back, and he works for Oxford University Press. So, Steve, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit more, especially as it pertains to your academic background and things you like to research, and just tell us why you're here.
My name is Steve Wiggins, and my research goes back to ancient Near Eastern studies mostly. I did my dissertation at Edinburgh University, and I have since taught occasionally, and I'm currently here in the capacity as an editor. And why I come to this conference, right now it's part of my job. I have come as a participant as well as as well as an editor. The big difference in that experience from my perspective is that I do not really get to hear papers much anymore. I used to come primarily to hear papers. Now I come primarily to obtain material for books. At the same time, I am giving a paper this year, so I'm not completely out of the paper sessions, but I don't see them much. And
what's your paper on?
I'm taking a venture into reception history. So I have not explored this before, but I started watching Sleepy Hollow a couple of months back and started to realize how central the Bible is to that series. And it occurred to me that you can learn a lot about the way popular perceptions, or you can learn a lot about popular perceptions of the Bible by looking at how it's portrayed in the media.
Yeah.
So I've taken a look at the series, watched each episode multiple times, and have tried to distill what I could from that.
Now, you've had a fairly long-standing interest in things like that. Media, just, I guess, the subject matter, what we would loosely call paranormal. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, I think that these things have actually been much more closely related to religious studies than people have given them credit for being. The paranormal, study of the paranormal has always been considered fringe in just about every discipline, whether it be social sciences or the hard sciences. But I think that there's very definitely a connection there that just simply does not let go in people's own experience. We're told that these things cannot happen, and therefore they don't happen, but people still see ghosts, and they still see UFOs, and they still see all kinds of things that shouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
When I stop to think about the unseen realm, to me that speaks of religion, and it's not the same as religion, but they share some conceptual territory.
Sure.
And I find that nexus very interesting.
Have you ever been to one of those conferences, like a UFO or paranormal conference? Have you ever lurked at one of those?
I've been tempted, but no, I haven't.
Well, you should do it sometime. You'd find it fascinating. People are kind of primed, you know, to talk about big picture, you know, religious things. You know, who are we? Why are we here? You know, is there a God? If there's a God, are there more than one? You know, because of the ET thing. People are really primed
to
have those discussions.
They seem to be much more open to religion than people would tend to think they are. I think I've noticed that in the various discussions I have seen, but I've not actually attended any of the conferences.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see you in Roswell one day. Yeah, bring some kids. Bring somebody along that they can go on the rides and do stuff like that. Well, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Oh, thank you, Michael.
Yeah. We're back here at SPL, and I'm with Wendy. I don't know if she'll give us her last name, but Wendy, why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Wendy Witter, and I am...
That wasn't hard.
No, that wasn't hard. What else am I supposed to say? What am I doing here?
Yeah. Well,
this year I came for a vacation with my best friend, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good enough. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself, your training, your interests, all that sort of thing.
I have a PhD in Old Testament that I can't find a really useful way to use.
Wendy went to Wisconsin, so we met there while I was finishing my grad work. She was just beginning. So her time on the rack was just beginning. So I know you just got here, but what have you gone to this point? Give us your impressions.
I've gone to breakfast.
Okay.
I went to a free lunch.
Was it any good?
Yeah, the free lunch was great. Zondervan lunch. I went to the IBR worship service, which was spectacular, and pretty much any paper after that couldn't measure up. So
why was it so good?
It's just good to remember with a whole bunch of like-minded people why most of us are in biblical studies anyway.
Right. Yeah.
And the diversity represented in the room, or the attempts and sensitivity to the need for diversity, were really good.
Well, that's good. Are you going to go to any papers? Are you angling for any books? or are you just kind of hanging
out? I'm angling for free books. I'm going to go hear my friend read her paper, and that's probably about it.
What's the paper on?
It's a response to a new book on Hebrew poetry by Chip Dobbs also.
Okay. Do you expect her to disagree or agree or what?
She's just writing a response to chapter one. Okay. There are five other panelists, and she did her dissertation on Hebrew poetry, so she has something to say. Okay. I don't know what it is yet.
All right. Well, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Oh, you're welcome, Mike.
Back at SBL, and we're with David Turner. So, David, can you introduce yourself to the audience, just who you are, what your specialty is, and why you've come to the conferences?
Yeah, I'm David Turner from Grand Rapids Theological Seminary in Michigan, and I teach New Testament studies there in Greek, and I've been coming to these things for a few decades now, and it's sort of a mixed experience, but you always hear something good along with what's bad, and you get to see all your old friends, so it's a good deal.
Right, it's worth it. So have you heard any good papers to this point?
Yeah, I studied Judaism in the Greco-Roman period at Hebrew Union College, and I've heard some good papers in the early Christian Judaism and Christianity relationships section.
Did you give any papers?
Not this time, no.
What are you looking forward to hearing in the time that remains?
Nothing.
So you've exhausted the playbook.
I pretty much, yeah. I just need to make another pass or two through the book room and see if I missed anything there.
Right. Well, a lot of people, you know, I've talked, and a few other people we've interviewed have talked about the book room. So are you looking for anything specific? Have you looked ahead, or are you just going to sort of drift?
Actually, I'm trying to buy something related to Syriac for a friend of mine, and I know nothing about Syriac, so it's quite an adventure.
Well, you know, somebody just came out with a new Syriac. It was Zondervan. You know, that little series they have, they start out with Hebrew and the Greek, then they did the Ugaritic volume. Somebody has done a Syriac. Grammar volume. Yeah, so go to the Zondervan table. It's like if it's like the other ones, it's going to be a real basic introduction. And the Ugaritic one's almost kind of, it tries to be witty and whimsical. So it's really kind of pared down, but it might be the same approach.
I just saw the Ugaritic one, but I didn't see a Syriac one.
Yeah, well, it's in their catalog. It's not the same person. I can't remember who did it, but it's there.
The biggest thing that's going on in the book room is there's a huge line of people trying to get a hold of my new book on Matthew 23 at the Fortress Press booth.
There you go.
Called Israel's Last Prophet. So everybody should run out and grab one of those.
Commercials are permitted. All right, well, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Happy to do so.
Here at SBL with Rick Brannon. Rick, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us why you're here?
My name is Rick Brannon, and I'm here because I'm an employee of Faith Life, makers of Logos Bible Software, and a colleague of Mike Heiser. And I'm at SBL because my employer told me I had to come. But I'm also at SBL because this is where the biblical scholars in the world sort of converge. And if there's one place where you can talk to a number of different people who are specialists in any given field, this is the place. So we do a lot of projects with these people. So one of the things I'm here for is to meet new people and to see what their skills are and to see if there's projects that we have that they could do, or if they want to pitch projects to us, we'd talk about stuff like that too.
Okay.
So
did you get a chance to go to any papers, or are you going to? I know we only have 2 days left.
Uh-huh. So yes, I've had a few chances. I have had a chance to go to a paper.
Was it any good?
There was one paper. There were some that were not, but there was one paper on Oxyrhynchus Papyrus 5072. That was actually pretty good. It's a non-canonical gospel. It was published in 2011, and it's got some stuff about demons in it, so I think Mike would really like it.
Okay.
But it's...
Are we going to publish that?
We already did. I did a translation and a transcription of it, and it's available in the Greek Apocryphal Gospels product. Which is why I wanted to go to the paper, so I could see what this guy was saying about the transcription, and to see what I'm going to have to revise because I did it wrong.
Are you looking to score any books?
Well, funny you should ask. That's another reason to come to SBL, of course, is the book exhibit, which is like Christmas Day, only you have to pay for it.
Have to pay for that, too. Yeah. You just don't get anything.
Exactly. I got a book from Baylor University Press on, it's called Christian Oxyrhynchus, and it is editions, and transcriptions and information and translations from a bunch of stuff from Oxyrhynchus, which is a huge garbage dump, basically, that they found in Egypt, thousands of years old, so back to about the 4th, 5th century in that area. And just all sorts of, they found a garbage dump with a bunch of papyrus, right? So stuff that people had written on and then thrown away, where we get actually a lot of New Testament evidence from, both the New Testament and some Septuagint stuff, but also other just literary papyri, so just documents of the day.
So does that have transcriptions and translations, that what's in that book?
It does. Transcriptions and translations, and then information about as well.
Okay.
Some notes as well. It's like 800 pages. It's pretty awesome.
Wow. Well, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, next up we have Ken Penner. Ken, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience, and again, why do you come to SBL? What's here that draws you?
Yeah, I'm Ken Penner here from Nova Scotia. I come here to give papers, to see the book exhibit, and to hear papers.
What's your position? Where do you teach?
At St. Francis Xavier University.
Do you have a lofty title?
Associate professor.
Oh, okay.
Well, of religious studies.
That's not too lofty. Some of these places like stick about four or five names in front of the thing, but you're not blessed with one of those. Okay. Have you heard any good papers?
Well,
moderately good.
Yes. Can I name them? No.
Well, what were they about? You don't have to give us names of who presented or anything.
Well, like the ones I'm most interested in are on Greek Isaiah, because that's what I'm writing a commentary on. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving a paper tomorrow on how Eusebius read Greek Isaiah, specifically how he treated the theme of faith and vocabulary of faith when he's reading Isaiah in Greek. But that's tomorrow morning. And the paper I gave yesterday was on the Hebrew verbal system. So it went through the first two chapters of 1 Samuel, showing that the verb system there seems to be following, seems to be a mood-prominent language.
Now, there have been a few people who have been working on the Hebrew verbal system in the last decade. Were any of those in the room? Any rivals?
John Cook was moderating the session.
Okay. Did he give you any pushback?
He did not. I gave him a copy of my book.
All right. So he played nice. All right. Okay. Well, I know John, so I can say that. All right. Well, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
You bet.
We're back at SBL, and I'm with George Gatkunis. George, why don't you introduce yourself? George and I have been longtime friends, but George is best suited to introduce himself by far.
Thank you, Mike. It's an honor to chat with you. I recall with very pleasant, fond memories the many conversations we've had through the ages. Ages meaning, I believe we've known each other for 35 years.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I would like to know, however, why you're not aging, if you're drinking the water in Bellingham, some miracle elixir that you've discovered, perhaps some Edenic herb. Please share the secret.
Well, they legalized marijuana, George.
Well, I'm a licensed attorney, so I will keep that in confidence.
Right,
but let's discuss other herbal remedies to aging.
Okay.
I'm Dr. George Gatkunis, attorney at law. I'm privileged to be one of the many members of the Logos family of authors. I'm new to the Logos scene, having published a 7-volume series on the relation of religion and law. And it would be a delight to interact with you in regard to that series. And it has been a privilege as well to attend what I teasingly call the Feast of Tabernacles, where we have a geek fest. The evangelicals and other Bible scholars meet concurrently in a variety of societies, all focused on religion. My first attendance was in fall of 1988, where I actually was a student with Mike in seminary. And since then, each and every year I've been able to attend, I bolt here because it is an accelerated seminary crash course, plural crash courses, over 8 days before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Have you heard any good conversations, good papers, any time during the week?
As you know, Mike, I am an attorney, and I'm especially sensitive to the changing vicissitudes in the legal world. In 1986, Bowers versus Hardwick, your and my, our Supreme Court, allowed states to have laws against homosexuality. As you are aware, also in 2002, our Supreme Court decided to make the laws that they approved for states in 86 unconstitutional. And just months ago, same-gender marriage was rendered, quote, of equal dignity.
Have you gone to any presentations on that here?
I have, and as one who's elected almost every year that I can remember for time immemorial to the Resolutions Committee, our committee received de novo, that is for the first time in recent history, Mike, proposed resolutions from the floor that counter the trend that has denied biblical animus, biblical impetus, biblical conceptual import on the issue of gay marriage. These resolutions did pass in a comfortable margin while I was on the Resolutions Committee on the stand. There on the bench in front of the Honorable Society that decided to put into the minutes an expression of their mind and will on the matter of gay marriage.
Can you summarize that?
Sure. We're all created in the image of God, which evangelicals believe, as per Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. Mm-hmm. Marriage is a covenantal union. The Lord brought the woman to the man, and this marriage is tripartite, meaning God is one of the parties of it. The resolutions include a statement that gender identity is a gift of God and therefore not subject to negotiation. And by implication, if someone says they're a woman when they have the body of a man or says they're a man when they have the body of a woman, those statements are untrue, implying they break the Ninth Commandment. And finally, of course, same-gender marriages are not recognized in Scripture. I've given you a brief summary. And if any of your readers, hearers, desire to go to ETS.org, the Evangelical Theological Society website, they can get more. And by the way, the MP3s of the lectures are available for download.
But are you talking about just those or just general?
All, to my knowledge.
Are they doing that for free?
I've been informed by one of the officers that these MP3 lectures are available on the website. Now,
wow.
I have not downloaded them myself.
Right.
In previous years, I've bought the CD-ROM for $150, put them on my iPhone, and I'm a marathon runner. When I'm training, I listen to lectures.
Mm-hmm.
However, it'd be nice to save that money and download them directly from the website.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I am informed.
Well, thanks for spending a few
minutes. Sure, Mike. It's always a pleasure to chat. Many, many pleasant memories. And I don't know how you keep those bags from not appearing under your eyes like mine. And you're doing a great job keeping your hair. But I do look forward to a resurrection body where I can run marathons ad infinitum.
All right.
God
thanks,
bless.
George.
Thank you, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Back at SBL, I'm here with Elizabeth Hayes, and why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Hayes. I teach Old Testament.
Where at?
I teach through Fuller Seminary.
Okay, what courses have you taught recently?
Old Testament, Intro to Old Testament, and the Book of Ruth,
Okay. And
I've taught some Hebrew.
Okay, good. So why do you come here? I mean, that's always the question. Why do scholars bother to come and take a week out of their lives and do this?
I think it's extremely important to meet up with people face-to-face, and especially in the days of social media that we're in right now, it's even more important to meet up face-to-face and have some time to interact with one another.
Right. So have you heard any good papers? Have you given any papers? How's the week been?
This week has been really good. I'm currently co-chair of the Biblical Hebrew Poetry section, so we've had one excellent session so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything that you thought was especially interesting? Something that surprised you?
Oh, let's see.
Did you read the papers in advance, or was that the first time you were hearing?
I've seen the abstracts in advance, and I was really pleased that the papers lined up with the abstracts, and we generated some good conversations, right?
No bait and switch. Right?
No bait and switch. Nobody went off on a tangent. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So it was good.
So
yeah.
Can you tell us anything that you found especially interesting, or you agreed with, or disagreed with, or something you learned?
Well, I think for me the important thing has been seeing the younger scholars, having been given an opportunity to speak, and the quality of their papers, which is usually very good. And that kind of followed this time as well. So it's good to see them coming up and participating and so forth.
Are you looking for anything specific at the book tables, or did you get a good deal on anything?
I have one book here called The Hebrew Bible, Old Testament History of Its Interpretation. It's my one book that I purchased, and I'm pretty excited about it. So.
Well, good. So thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Okay, thanks.
We have with us Tom Meltzer. Tom, why don't you introduce yourself and just tell everybody why you come to this thing?
Well, I'm a layman. I'm not a biblical scholar by any stretch, but I've had an interest for 40 years. And I just like the intellectual stimulation of SBL. Ahead of this, we always attend Azor because we have a small project in Jerusalem.
For those who don't know, Azor is?
The American Society of Oriental Research. Basically, it's an archaeology convention. So SBL this year has been fairly interesting. I always try to capitalize on one topic, and this year, just due to a chance conversation at a reception a few nights ago, somebody told me that they had done a presentation with Jürgen Moltmann on the topic of hope. And it's touched off a study, not only here at the in the lectures, but also back at the hotel room. And I've been researching that topic a little bit and getting into it a little bit more. And I just happen to also bring an excerpt of a book on that topic by Charles Welch. So putting it all together, it's been sort of the central focus of my visit here at SBL this year.
Can you say anything about the project you alluded to, or is it something for public consumption? Or?
In Jerusalem, we are actually looking at two things. I'm connected with the Associates for Scriptural Knowledge, which is a longstanding biblical research foundation, fairly technical in their approach to the Bible. And one of the things in Jerusalem is their approach towards where the original temples were located. The common assumption is that there is a temple mount, and that is where the temples were located. There are numerous reasons, historical archaeologists, rabbis, and biblical facts that would discount the temple mount as being the actual location of the first two temples. If you look at that facility, it looks like a fort. It was basically a craggy area that was flattened off. I believe it was done by Herod the Great, which would put that whole structure up there, and the floor, the high floor, so to speak, upon which the Dome of the Rock sits, in his reign. So that construction, I think, was done somewhere between 33 BCE and 2 CE, and not farther back. I do not believe that in 900 BCE was the first temple located on the Temple Mount.
So your project, you don't have to mention any names as far as who's helping you, but essentially the project is aimed at doing what?
Well, we'd like to establish where the actual location of the temple is. It is more likely that it was in the old city of David, likely immediately adjacent to David's palace, probably sat a little higher in elevation than David's palace, but lower than what is the Haram, the Temple Mount, which we think was the Fort Antonio.
So you're paying attention to, for instance, what Eilat Mazar is doing as far as trying to determine whether we've discovered David's palace or not, that sort of thing?
Yes, she did a lot of research and has put out at least one book on the digs that have been done in the city of David. There was another recent find of a small palace or temple in that area, certainly not one of the original two Jewish temples, done by a combination of Ronnie Reich and an archaeologist by the name of Shukron. And it's a fairly small dig site near the Gihon Spring. But we think the original temple sites were located immediately above the Gihon Spring.
Did you hear anything this year that relates to this issue or not?
Not this year. In previous years, there have been archaeological presentations on the waterworks surrounding the Gihon Spring, the Warren Shaft, some of the reservoirs that are in there. It's very likely that at one time that spring was strong enough through a constricted opening to lift water all the way to the temple site immediately above the spring. And this makes sense from the standpoint that Psalm 80, I believe, tells us that in the temple there would be living water. If you had to take water from the Gihon Spring and aqueduct it to a higher elevation a third of a mile away, that water would no longer be considered living water. And
because it's not moving?
Yes, not fresh from there. And they needed a lot of water on that temple site, over 2,000 head of cattle and sheep and were sacrificed on the Day of Atonement. And they would need a lot of water for that type of event. But there are numerous other aspects as to why we think the temple site is there.
Well, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
If I can go ahead. If you work backwards from that, if you can reason backwards, there is a further thought here that the Tomb of David, which has not been discovered, should also be in somewhat in that immediate vicinity. And to that end, we have been working with archaeologists and the Antiquities Commission in Israel to eventually work towards a discovery of King David's tomb. We think it would be the most important find since the Dead Sea Scrolls. And to that end, it's difficult to find a tomb. There is a record in Josephus that Herod the Great opened the tomb at one time with some disastrous results, and he ordered that it be covered up and closed up again. And there are really only records of two accesses to that tomb throughout history. And no one seems to know where it is. Jewish tradition places it on a mount over across the valley from where we think it is. And we think it would be quite significant. In fact, there might be metal in that tomb that would provide funding for the third temple, which is prophesied to be built. Now, to the end of trying to find the tomb through or in a rock structure, we are working with an ex-NASA contractor and engineer who has done work with the Great Pyramid at Giza and has done acoustic levitation devices for the space shuttle, devices that would hold objects in microgravity on sound waves. And he has been working with a couple of concepts, now discarded, as to how to access it. And we feel we're real close to having a technological advance that would help locate just such a tomb in that area.
Well, thanks. It's interesting. And again, that the website, I guess, where people can look up more information would be the Associates for Scriptural Knowledge. Is that correct?
Yes. The accurate website would be ask, A-S-K-E, as in Ernest, L, M, A-S-K-E-L-M .com.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, all right, Mike, that wraps up our interviews. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to doing it again next year. I had fun doing it, and there were a lot of people that we did interview that were kind of, I guess for lack of a better word, flattered. Like, wow, I get to be on a podcast. Again, scholars just Yeah, a lot of them just tend to sort of orbit around in their own little world. So it's nice, I think, for them when they sense and they know. And of course, if they're getting recorded, they realize that, hey, people are actually interested in what I do, that it could, you know, it has some value, you know, beyond sort of the traditional outlets, at least as they're familiar with them. So it was fun, and everybody who participated had a lot of fun with it. So for sure, I'll do it next year and try to do even more, and maybe kind of drill down even more specifically into some of the things that people are working on.
Well, next year, you're in my back door in Texas. Mm-hmm. So
yep, San Antonio.
Yeah, so I'll try to come down to that. Maybe we could do a live podcast show. Maybe we have an audience. I don't know. Maybe we could do something special for it.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. We're going to have to put our heads together and think about that, because that would be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Well, next week, we're back into Leviticus with 17 and 18.
Yep, Leviticus 17, 18. We get into some of the, again, it's just sort of an odd assemblage, at least on the surface, of laws. I mean, you got in chapter 18, especially laws about certain points of morality. Again, chapter 17, you know, going into sort of the handling of animals and where to go and not to go and that sort of thing. And of course, the matter about apparently in Israel's history, this problem with being afraid of the wilderness and sacrificing to demons and whatnot. So 17, you know, is familiar because of the laws about consumption of blood. And again, this reference to demons. And then 18 is really where you get the, you know, thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of this or that person. You know, again, all these laws about sexual morality. So we'll hit both of them. We'll run through both of them in one episode.
Okay, so you're saying no naked vampires is what it's basically.
Right. Naked vampires are a bad thing.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, Mike. We appreciate you interviewing everybody for us. It's fun to take a peek into the world of scholars and what y'all talk about behind closed doors. And I know I thoroughly enjoyed it, so I appreciate it. And I just want to thank everybody for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit www.nakedbibleblog.com. To learn more about Dr. Heiser's other websites and blogs, go to www.drmsh.com.